For as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be cool. I've wanted people to look at me and instantly know, that guy's cool. When I was in the fourth grade, I begged my mom to buy me JNCO jeans, and I styled my hair just like Justin Timberlake from the NSYNC days. I went through a lot of LA Looks firm hold hair gel that year. And I think it worked. I felt pretty cool. That was, of course, until the girls I liked all said that the reason they had crushes on the fifth grade boys was because they all wore white K-Swiss shoes, silver wristwatches, and puka shell necklaces. Guess what I asked mom for that summer? I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong with recognizing a trend in fashion and jumping on the bandwagon, but I have always been a little perplexed at how I always seem to be jumping on the bandwagon a little later than everyone else. I notice these trends and spend several months trying to decide if I could pull them off or not. Then by the time I pull the trigger and update my style, it's almost time for cool kids the world over to move on to the next big thing. Am I missing the wave because I'm too afraid or insecure to catch it right when it starts? Or is it something else? Maybe I just innately and fundamentally don't have that great of taste. Maybe there's like a cool gene that I'm lacking. I mean, I obviously have good enough taste to recognize that I like something and then replicate it, but how much credit can I really take for that? Shouldn't the credit go to the people who were doing it first? You know, the people I blatantly ripped off? I see this with my music, my acting, my clothes, my sense of humor, everything. I see a trend emerging, I observe it, I decide I like it, and then I adopt it as part of me. My friend Jess Kellner is one of those effortlessly cool people, the kind I'd see on the street and take mental notes to model my look after. He seems to think this is all anyone is doing, that the people I'm ripping off are just ripping off other people that they admire, and that I'm probably influencing others who think that I'm the true original and I just don't know about it. Maybe he's right. But that kind of sounds like something an effortlessly cool person who doesn't even recognize their own coolness because they never really had to work for it would say, right? Because someone did it first. Someone had to have. Some people are bold enough and confident enough and just goddamn cool enough to call themselves Ziggy Stardust and paint a lightning bolt on their face without having to have had seen a bunch of other kids doing it first. Someone has to kick off the revolution, right? It can't just be that everyone is insecurely copying everyone else hoping they don't get called out, can it? I had Jess come over and talk to me about trendsetters and about how having good taste can be a major ingredient in creating really good art. I tried desperately to get him to spill the magic secret to coolness that I am so certain he possesses, but he didn't spill it. I'm just glad he's my friend, because if he thinks I'm good enough to be friends with, then that must mean at least a few people out there might think I'm pretty cool, right? Right? Well, from a blanket float recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to my friend Jess Kellner about taste. Stay up on the thing. We're recording.
Oh.
This is going.
Oh.
This is the podcast.
Oh, great. We're killing it.
Welcome to the blanket fort, Jess.
Welcome to the blanket fort.
This is my first time recording with anyone in the blanket fort. My idea, I bought this divider.
You did?
I bought this divider because my friends, Stuart and Drew, who are New York comedians, they're really like tough New York comedian.
New York. Yeah, how you doing? May we stay in your apartment?
Hey, we coming in to stay with you.
Yeah, sure. For how many days?
I don't know, like 6 or a month.
Got a couple sets at the store. We're going to do a set at the store.
Yeah, no problem.
Anyway, this is like a palace to them, this Los Angeles little, like, I set up a divider and they have high ceilings.
Is a very high ceiling.
Yeah, we got a very high ceiling
it's
in here, which is why it's too high to record, but that's why I had the idea to set up the blanket fort, to kind of trap the sound in this very high-ceilinged room. But I thought, we have people stay with us a lot, and so I thought the divider would be good for them.
and for their privacy, but also I could use the divider to kind of create this little like blanket fort for me to record music and record podcasts in.
And you think it works better?
I don't know. You need to stay on your mic because I'm not getting like any.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
How hard?
You need
how
to
fucking,
stay close.
Is this close enough
that's
or no?
Yeah, but you need to face it. Okay. Yeah, there you go. Because
well,
I can see it when
Jesus
you get close.
Christ.
Yeah.
I'm going to. Oh, my God.
All right.
Austin is literally just holding his pop. What's it called? A pop screen?
Pop filter.
Pop filter in front of him.
Yeah.
As he talks into the mic.
We're in a fucking blanket fort, man.
Yeah, well. Oh.
We're going to hear that.
We're gonna
I'll just edit all this out.
I'm just trying to. I know. It would be great if it was just. I'm going to just. Should I? Is it bad if I don't use this?
You don't have to use it, but I'm just saying we're going to get all
but
these closes, and then people aren't going to want to listen to my show because you refuse to hold your fucking pop filter.
It just looks silly.
Yeah.
I feel silly doing it.
They don't know.
Just I know now. I just told them.
We're holding pop filters like giant lollipops.
Yeah.
And we're like leaning uncomfortably into the microphones
because they hardly work. And it took
this one. Mine works better than yours. So I'm going to have to like in the mix, turn mine down and turn yours up because yeah. I'm getting.
Why don't we just both just like.
Talk into mine and then talk 6 inches away from each other.
Have a conversation
and look
like,
straight into each yeah. other's eyes like
just telling jokes to each other while we're 6 inches away
and my breath smells like garlic
oh
salt
God.
From the quesadilla I made earlier.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, the blanket fort I think in the fullness of time is going to be over there in that corner, and it's going to be a little bit more of like a put together blanket fort. But because Stuart and Drew are staying here from New York
from
we
New
gotta,
York
since they're doing such at the store, they're roasting each other at the store tonight. They called me today and they said, hey, we're trying to find lunch in New York, but we can't find any place to get pizza.
Pizza?
Well, how come Los Angeles doesn't have any pizza?
It's really good. It's a really good. I like.
Chris D'Elia talks about how East Coast people say pizza.
Pizza. Yeah, I feel like my grandparents did that.
Hey, you want to get some pasta and pizza?
Yeah, they're like, pizza? What am I grabbing?
I haven't seen a single Two Brothers since I got into town.
What are you doing?
I've seen so many donut shops, but not a single
donut.
Two Brothers.
Donut. You gotta put an R in the end of that.
A donut?
A donut.
A donut.
A donut.
A donut.
Yeah, he's got a little donut.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Dunkin' Donuts.
All right. I think I'm getting you now.
Yeah, better?
Yeah, you
more.
Just need to like lean in. You need to like act. You just
I'm really
need
fucking. I'm leaning. I keep hitting it with this thing because it's not even a stable thing. So I keep hitting it, which you're gonna
yeah,
get.
So you just
you're gonna
kinda,
get that.
You wanna just like try to be calm. All right. Try to be calm.
I'm
try to be zen.
To...
Try to like lean into your microphone and don't fucking give me shit about it. Just lean into your microphone and do your job.
This I know. This is like the beginning of your podcast, but like.
This is bad.
You have to figure this out.
It's not going well.
You have to.
This is
a rocky.
This ties into what I want to talk to you about, though.
Yeah. Talk to me.
So I want to talk to you about. Well, first of all, this is Jess Kellner, everybody. Jess Kellner's in the blanket fort. Jess Kellner is an award-winning film.
Is that the name of this podcast, The Blanket Fort?
No, there's already a podcast called The Blanket Fort, so
damn
this
it.
One's called People Pleaser.
Is there?
That's the working title right now.
Did
yeah.
you actually look up
you know any, you know
Blanket
any podcast
Fort?
Names I went through before I just landed on People Pleaser?
Was Blanket Fort one of them?
Blanket Fort was one of them.
No way.
And Blanket Fort's a
wow.
podcast. There's like three Blanket Fort podcasts.
Wow.
Yeah. There was like two people that didn't care that there was already a Blanket Fort podcast
right.
that just were like, fuck it,
like,
we're making.
Fuck you.
Yeah. So... I think they had the same idea of like making a blanket fort to like make sound better.
Oh, 100%.
And they were like, "Ooh, blanket
like,
fort!
Oh, I'm so original."
And like, it's really cute.
And you're not.
Yep, that's right. Well, that's why I changed the name of mine because I am original.
Wow.
Anyway, Jess Kellner is here. He's an award-winning filmmaker.
Wow.
He has a singular award for his filmmaking.
I won one award.
He won. That's you're an award.
But it's only
filmmaker.
Been in two festivals.
So that's pretty
so
good odds. That's pretty
that's
good 50%. Odds. 50%. If you were nominated for a Golden Globe and an Oscar, you would have won at least one of them. With those odds.
Yeah. with yeah. those odds, uh-huh. taking those odds in.
Taking those odds into account.
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
Pretty good.
I want to talk to you today. First of all, do you want to say anything about your film?
No, I don't know.
Good, because I don't actually want to talk about it.
Yeah, that's fair. I know. You were like, when we were talking before in the kitchen, you were like, oh, yeah, you can do like a little plug. I'm like, I don't want to fucking do a plug of like my short
film. I don't know. Where can you see it? Like, can you see
it? You can't see it. Like, yeah, no one can see it. Point,
like, no. I made this thing. You're not going to see it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It yeah,
you gotta
good.
You gotta trust me.
Well,
you will be able to see it eventually. When is this podcast coming out? You know what I mean? Next year?
I don't know. So yeah. maybe by the time people are listening to
it. The name of the film is Enough is Enough.
All right.
And my name is Jess Kellner. And hopefully if you were to type both of those things in.
You'd see something about it. You'd see like on that what, little sign with like the leaves that goes around where it says you're an award-winning person.
The Laurel, it's called.
The Laurel? Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
I never knew that. That's interesting. Yeah.
I think so.
That makes sense. That sounds right. That sounds like something I would
this
believe.
Laurel if, to your, yeah.
Yeah. If yeah. I was listening to this, I'd believe that.
You'd be like, yeah, laurels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to talk to you about taste. And I think it really ties in nicely to what we were talking about how shitty this setup is for this podcast recording. Because it's like, if you looked at a photo of us recording this podcast, you'd be like, I'm not listening to that. Yeah. Like, it looks awful. I'm physically uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. My hip is like, is out of place right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm leaning into this microphone. So
and it's not even a well-made blanket fort. It's like, the thing's
it's
like.
It's hardly a fort. You have one blanket.
It's probably not doing anything, but we're sort of in an enclosed
like
space where
I'm. It
could
fall down at any moment.
Yeah. It feels very unstable and also unprofessional. Mm-hmm. But the idea is, I thought your film, and I said this to you when we were talking about it, I said, I think it looks really great. Like, and I kept saying that, and you were like, you don't like my movie. And I was like, why do you think that? And you're like, because you keep just saying, like, it looks good.
Yeah.
Like, you're not complimenting anything else about it. It's like going to see a person's play, and you're like, the costumes were.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even the award that I got, it was for editing, cinematography, and acting. And I was just like, why don't you just say it's a good movie? What else is there?
You get like, the award else? For outstanding writing, directing, editing, cinematography, and acting.
Yeah. I'm just like, why did you have to...
The sound design was kind of shit.
I guess the writing. They didn't say writing. So maybe the writing was off.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's my first film, so...
Uh-huh. I didn't say that, though. I didn't say that the writing was off. But I also think, and I think a lot of people think this who are aspiring independent filmmakers, that like making something that looks good is like maybe more than half the battle. Like making something that looks like it, like the person behind the lens has a strong point of view and has a strong sense of – or just I guess has good taste. Like it helps a lot in selling the thing because so many people – make a thing in film school or you know, like we'll show you the short that they made. And like the first thing you notice, if it's not the shitty sound quality, it's this looks like shit.
Right.
Like really bad edits, really, maybe like a couple interesting shots, like a couple like interesting wide takes or a couple like interesting frame ups. But like the editing's all over the place. The like, it just feels weird because stylistically it, you know, then the first thing I notice, and I think the first thing a lot of people notice when they watch your film is like, oh, this looks great.
It's
really beautiful. It looks like a very like pleasing Instagram profile. Yes. It looks like a,
it's nice. Yeah. I think that's also, that's been a lot of the compliments that I've been getting is like, they're like, oh, I like the tone or like the mood or like, I like the way it like, you know, which I guess is just like how it feels, which is fine. I mean, I was lucky enough to take it to like a professional coloring house, and have it, you know, professionally colored. And we shot it on like an Alexa with master prime lenses. And
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Just like a very nice camera package.
Yeah. Not a lot of people get to work with an Alexa on their independent film. Yeah.
So it was in that way, it was definitely, but I'd like to think that I that the shots that I, you know, and my brother was also the cinematographer on it, but, you know, I'd like to think that the shots that I thought up and executed were...
Well, and your brother is a very good cinematographer. He's a very good
DP. He is good.
DP
He's
and,
amazing.
And, but I think that that – so that's another question that I had going into this is like – well, first of all, so talking about taste, because I feel like a big part of what makes that work is like I think you have a really good eye for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think you have a good sense for that. I mean, you're a visual artist. You're a painter.
True.
And I think you have a good sense for aesthetic, and I think that your brother shares that as well. I think you can see it when you hang out with you too. So, like, this is where I want to start this, is, like, like me being an insecure person in, like, the music scene in my early adulthood, even when I was a kid, I always wanted people to think I was cool. I still do. I have this, like, really big obsession with, like, people thinking I'm cool and, like, me knowing that I'm not and knowing that I'm, like, trying hard to look cool and seem cool. And everything about my persona is, like, I'm, you know. But then I meet people. Like, if I go play kickball with you and Ty and your friends, I'm like, these are a bunch of people who, like, being cool comes naturally to them. They they dress nice naturally. Yeah. And, like, so stuff like that, I'm like, of course it looks good and of course it looks cool because these guys understand aesthetic intrinsically, like it's just like a thing that seems to come really naturally.
Yeah.
And I've heard you talk about taste in that kind of way where you feel like it can account for a lot.
Well, yeah, I thought about recently like that I'm not even sure. I don't know, like I don't know it, I don't, I've been trying to think of what taste is because I'm not sure it's a it's like a thing. I mean, it might, like, if I think of, like, so one of my favorite books is The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I started, like, thinking about, you know, why this is one of my favorite books and why some of his other books are not, you know, my favorite books. And I think the subject matter of, you know, this girl, you know, who, like, kind of disappears and leaves this guy is an intrinsic belief that I have about myself and my life. So, like, I have this belief that, like, the woman that I love is going to leave me always, and that there's, like, this uncontrollable force that is, like, pulling this girl away. I've thought
so
of...
So insecure. Yeah. I have no idea what that's like. I'm always extremely confident that the women I love aren't going anywhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just, like... So this was, like, a theme that I've thought, you know, in my past. And, you know, I've kind of confronted and dealt with since then. But I think that that's why that's one of my favorite books is because it's... I mean, and it's, like... Do I have good taste just because, like, that is – or is that just my beliefs about the world and about myself being reflected back to me? And is that the reason I like certain things?
Well, yeah. It's so I think what you're talking about with that book sounds more like
– I mean, that's my – you know, I would say that, like, oh, that book, like, that's my taste. Like, I would say
that's your aesthetic. That's your, yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's a book, so it's not, like, aesthetic.
Yeah, but someone could say that Jack Kerouac is their taste, or,
right,
like, that feeling, that, like, beatnik sense of, like,
right,
like, there's, I mean,
but
I,
maybe it's just, you know,
Bukowski is my taste.
Right.
That's my, that Hunter S. Thompson is, like, my vibe. That's the, you know, right, like, I get what you're saying. I think people can relate to that.
So I wonder if taste actually exists. I mean, like, I mean, I think that, you know, or is it just me taking the feelings and the prior films and prior art and prior photographs and all of these things that I've kind of just have been presented in my life? Am I just kind of like internalizing those things and then like regurgitating them and being like, oh, these are the things that I like, but only because they...
Well, and see, I feel like that's what I do.
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm choreographing a dance, I'm just taking things that I've seen in like a Pina Bausch dance that I really liked. And I'm like, I love her, the way that she does these arms. I'm going to just straight up steal it.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like that bleeds into the way I dress and the way, like, I just go like, oh, I like that outfit. I like the way that, like, that guy's jeans are high-waisted and his shirt's tucked in and the jeans are kind of flooded. I'm going to look for a pair of jeans that fits like that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to wear that outfit.
Yeah.
And it's a straight up, like, I'm copping that. that. Like I'm stealing that. And I think that's similar to I think that's a little bit what you're talking mm-hmm. about. But I also think that like that makes me feel like everyone knows I'm a little bit like that doesn't come as naturally as it does for other people mm. where like there's the original person to do it. And then there's all the people who are going, I like that. I'm going to do it too. And,
but is there an original person doing it?
I
like,
don't know.
Or is it just like, or right. You don't know.
Yeah.
And like that person that you think like originally did it is probably just taking, you know, influences or whatever from, you know, this, that, and the other thing and taking it and then like presenting it in another in their own way. And even if you try to do it, even if you were to try to do the same thing, because it's an expression of you,
uh-huh.
it's automatically tainted. This expression is automatically tainted because it's coming through you now.
Yeah, can't help but have my own voice. Can't help but have my own, like, right. like no matter, even if I try to write a song exactly like Elliott Smith, it's going to turn out like me.
Correct.
They just can't help but have that be what happens,
yeah.
you know.
At the same time, yeah. But at the same time, I do know, you know, I know what you're talking about. I do know, and I don't know if, like, you know, so if there isn't taste, if there is no taste, and your taste is just your beliefs about your world and yourself reflected back to you, is, like, if you have bad taste, does that mean, like, you're just, like, kind of maybe more of a boring person? It's just harsh.
Or are you a person who like is such an original that you don't give a fuck?
Yeah.
That like, are you the true, like the true
yeah.
trailblazer? Like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
like, are you like a David Foster Wallace who's like, oh no, I'm wearing like a bandana and like, you like, he wasn't copying anybody with that whack ass style, like long hair and glasses and like a bandana and like a flannel wrapped around his waist, you know, like
who?
David Foster Wallace, you know that writer?
No.
He wrote,
I thought you were describing Kid Rock for a minute.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But like, he's like this famous writer who I think he hung himself in his, and I can't remember if he hung himself or shot himself,
oh,
but
shit.
He wrote, I can't remember what book he wrote. I'll talk about it in the yeah. intro. I'll say what book he wrote.
Great.
But he wrote a couple really famous books, and then yeah. like he at a young familiar. Age, he killed himself.
Yeah.
But he, and this wasn't that long ago, but like his style is very, and you see people like this too, who it just seems like, oh, that person genuinely isn't trying to impress me, and they look awesome.
Yeah.
You know that, so that's what I'm talking about is like, yes, it's internalizing stuff that you see and recognize as stuff that speaks to you and stuff that you like, and then regurgitating it back out in your own unavoidably unique way.
Yeah.
But are there people who it comes easier to than other people, do you think? Like so here's like my question is Bob Dylan may not have been the best guitar player playing guitar in Greenwich Village in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
He may not have been the best singer. He probably almost certainly wasn't the best singer.
Yeah.
But the guy had undeniable fucking style and
yeah.
taste,
you
yeah. know? And like, was Bob Dylan copying the people that he thought were cool, or was Bob Dylan setting a trend?
I think,
and other people were copying him, because there's plenty of people that everyone went, oh, you're a Dylan wannabe, or you're a Dylan, you know, like, but like,
right.
was no one was calling Dylan a someone else wannabe. Like, he
right.
seemed like, you see that guy and you go, he doesn't seem like he's imitating anyone else or trying to impress me. He seems like he is that.
Well, I don't think the regurgitating thing that I'm talking about is necessarily a conscious act. Like, I don't think even if he was, I think he probably was just like taking things, parts of music that he had heard and things that he liked, and then in his own self-expression, you know, taking from these things and letting it influence, you know, his self-expression. I don't know if you can help but do that. I don't know if he was actively trying to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he's like actively being like, oh, I like the way I like, you know, this guy's hat and this guy's jacket, and I'm gonna do that. But as you explore and you know, walk this beautiful earth, and you see a jacket, or you see style, or you know, like you see something, and then later on you see another jacket, and you're like, oh, I like this jacket. I'm not sure why I liked this jacket, but it might have just been when you cross someone on the street, you were just like, ah, oh, I like that jacket. And it just like registered in your mind and then like shot to the back. And like, you'll never remember that that's what influenced you and why you like this remember. Jacket.
Right. I remember that, yeah. it was someone else that I saw that I wanted to look like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so I think, I think there is people who are doing it more effortlessly, but I don't know. Yeah,
I guess this is coming from, and I guess I'm just gonna put you on blast here, but I remember I think I asked you once when we were both living in Brooklyn. I asked you, like, do you think I dress cool? And you said, like, I think you dress like someone who is, like, I think you said something like, I think you dress a little younger than you are, like you dress like you're trying to, like, be cool to high school kids.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and I think in general, like, it shows that you're trying to look cool with the way you dress.
Yeah.
And I was like, God damn it, because I am trying so hard. And I was like, is that a bad thing? Like, that people look at my outfit and can tell, like, that guy put a lot of thought into that.
Yeah.
But I'm like,
well, you came
I did.
Over in all white the other day, and I was like, oh, that's a power move. You know, like, wow.
Literally, I was wearing an outfit similar to that the other day, and Mary goes, she's like, do you wear all white right now because Sia came into your restaurant wearing all white? And I was like, maybe.
No way!
Sia came into my restaurant. I didn't know it was Sia. But yeah. All I knew was, like, this lady's so cool.
Yeah.
She was – apparently Sia, like – I mean, I don't want to, like, blow up Sia's spot here or, like, yeah. or like give her – you know. But apparently she, like, works with, like, wayward teenagers who are, like, addicted to drugs and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And she often, like, takes them on lunches to my restaurant, and she, like – well, but since I didn't know what Sia's face looks like because of her hair, I, you know, Sia has hair that covers her face normally. Yeah. I didn't know what she looked like. And one of my coworkers had to come up and go, that's Sia. Did you know that? And I had already been thinking, like, this lady's cool.
Yeah.
Like, she was wearing, like, an oversized white T-shirt, white sweats, white socks, and cool white tennis shoes.
Yeah.
And, like, her hair was, like, pulled up in a bun. And she had, like, cool, trendy tattoos, like, on her arms and stuff. And I was like, dude, this lady looks cool. I was like,
awesome.
This lady looks so awesome.
Yeah.
And also she's, like, I don't know, like, older than me, but, like, you know, just seemed like she fucking was cool and, like, you know. And then so Mary was like, are you wearing all white because you saw Sia wearing all white? And I was like, yeah, maybe. But also I was like, I registered it and I was like, that's dope.
Yeah.
I was like, that's
like
fucking
all white outfits are great.
Yeah.
I noticed it too.
And then I'll do like a little
on
pop
you.
Of like,
you're no Sia, but I was like, oh wow, all white.
I had like a black belt on and like black shoes, like, you know, like I had like a
You had, like, running shoes on, I think. Like, athletic shoes.
Or was I wearing Tevas? Or was I wearing,
I don't know.
No, I think I actually wore white tennis shoes. I think I actually
Did
wore
you?
White tennis shoes with white socks.
I don't know. I think I would have known.
I've been rocking that lately. But
I think I noticed that your shoes weren't white, and I was like, oh, that'd be great.
See, and I think that's the difference, though, is I think we both dress well. I think that, like, we both have a good sense of style.
Yeah.
But I think it, for whatever reason, and it's partially what I'm talking about right now, is, like, I think it's noticeable that when you see my outfits, it's like, oh, that's a very calculated, like, decision that guy's – he, like, really, like, picked those out pieces. And you have a knack for, like, wearing a cool outfit that looks like that guy just kind of grabbed what was lying around and put it on, and it happens to be really cool.
Yeah.
Like, it happens
so
to
nice.
Be – I mean –
Yeah.
And, like, where does that come from? Like, I
don't know. I think trial and error. I think just, you know, I moved to New York when I was around 21, or I started going to school there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just, like, being in the city as well and having that influence of just starting to be in a city where there was – because I was going to school in New Jersey before that. And, like, these people don't have fashion. And, like, you know, growing up in New Jersey, like, I wore, like, baggy corduroy pants and, you know, Quicksilver shirts and, like, you know, and you know, the cool people in my high school were kind of hippie-ish. Like, they all like went to, like, Dead concerts and listened to Fish and Allman Brothers. And
the cool people in your high school
were kind of
went
like
to
hippies.
Fish concerts
yeah
and, like, Grateful Dead concerts.
Yes.
So the cool kids in my high school, we call them iPod kids. They would wear like skinny jeans and hoodies, and they would always have their, because it was like when iPods first came out when I was in high school, and they would always have their iPod like headphones in, and you knew they were just like listening to something really cool, like The Shins or like, you know, like Neutral Milk Hotel or like, you know, like
Neutral Milk Hotel.
Yeah, great. Yeah. But like, though I, when I was in high school, I wore like American Eagle and Abercrombie and Fitch every day, and I was like, you know, but I would see those kids and I'd be like, man, I want to be an iPod kid.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
But they weren't listening to fucking Fish. Yeah. But I guess that's a difference between an East Coast and a, and, you know, but
yeah,
it's that same thing of like, I saw those kids and I wanted to be those kids. And almost immediately in college, I got the balls to like start dressing like those kids.
Right.
And I instantly felt like,
because you could reinvent yourself.
Yeah. But I also instantly felt like a phony, because all my friends from high school who would see me like a year into college were like, oh, so you're this now? they'd be like, oh, and you think we don't know?
Really?
I feel like people would like, I also, my transition like through 4 years of college was like each year I got more and more comfortable. Yeah. Like, dressing more hip,
yeah,
and like wearing like skinny jeans and like cutting my hair in interesting ways and like, you know, and then
I think that's about that time. I mean, in high school I just didn't, I don't know, I didn't, I either didn't have that outlet or I didn't have like the comfortability. Like, I remember in college I started wearing like, I came into some like, someone had like girl jeans and I started wearing like these girl jeans.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where to get tight jeans.
Yeah, yeah,
back
yeah.
Back in the day. So like, I just started wearing these like tight jeans.
I used to ask my friend, I used to, when we would go to concerts in high school, we would go to like, I was really into The Format and I was really into like Jimmy Eat World and stuff. And when we would go to like pop punk concerts, I would ask my friend if I could borrow his skinny jeans. But his skinny jeans, he would wear his twin sister's skinny jeans. Mm-hmm. But he like wore them every day. And he was like my cool friend. But I would, when we'd go to concerts together, and I'd be like, I can't wear my clothes to the concert. I gotta like look cool at the concert. So I would like borrow like a band shirt from him and I would borrow his sister's jeans. And I would wear,
amen.
Because they didn't sell in 2005, they didn't sell skinny jeans to boys. They didn't, unless you went to Hot Topic or something.
Yeah, which I didn't, I just didn't know where to get them. Yeah. I think I would have, and I don't know.
Well, and that's interesting to see the trajectory of, like, where it was this kind of, like, counterculturist thing, and then pretty soon it was, like, the norm for skinny jeans to be the thing that is sold.
I remember my brother, like, making fun of me and being like, oh, wow, you're, like, you're wearing skinny jeans? Like, oh, you look like, and I was just like, dude, this is... And then, lo and behold, he starts wearing skinny jeans like a year or two after. You know what I mean?
Well, they became
And then I went to New York, and then I started like, people were wearing like these huge baggy, like, you know, the wider cut of pants, you know, like these huge baggy pants and jeans. And I started like doing that. And then, you know, slowly my brother started doing it too.
Someone,
my brother's always
someone
a little.
Someone fucking started this though. Yeah. And it was like bands, like people in bands were like wearing skinny jeans. Like Ben Gibbard was like wearing skinny jeans when he was doing the Postal Service and stuff. But like,
I don't know where trends come from.
But there are the kids in high school who were the cool kids, the hippie kids that you had, and like the iPod kids that I had. Did they have like better parents or something that like allowed them to be cool? Because you have pretty cool parents.
Yeah. And they're like, cool enough. But, I mean, yeah. I think if I think I dress more like my dad now than I ever did. I'm kind of starting to like accept this New England dad, you know, like a nice fleece. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, but also that's cool now too.
Yes, exactly.
That's also cool now. Like I'm the most dad right now like ever. Mary and I go out all the time, and she's like, "You look so much like a dad right now." Like
an oversized crew neck sweatshirt that's kind of like worn in. And
an
whatever.
Oversized linen button up like, that I tuck in, and it's like hanging off of my arms a little bit, and I like, and it's kind of got like a too much of a gaudy pattern on it.
Yeah,
and I tuck it into like. High-waisted khakis, and I'm like, yeah, I look so with like a goofy hat, you know, but it's like, it's kind of like a put together outfit. It's kind of like sharp, but it's also like goofy as shit. And
I'm sure you're killing it.
And it's very different from how I dressed 5 years ago, you know?
Right.
But also like, I'm aware of that being like an acceptable aesthetic right now, but I don't know. I guess so. The next question I would say, we're not going to solve the question of who starts it because neither one of us know, apparently.
No.
But someone does. But the next question I have is, you mentioned like your brother Ty. You were like, well, it's me working in conjunction with my brother Ty, who's a great DP.
Who his girlfriend styles him. So if you ever think that he dresses cool, it's like.
What a fucking.
Yeah.
phony
ass. It's his French girlfriend just being like, oh, you should get these. Put these on. Put on these pants.
I think I have better style than Mary, so.
Nice. Yeah. I think I have better style than my girlfriend. She disagrees. So, for sure. She's
like, I don't think that, yeah. Like, but then I bet she could. She could shop for stuff that she knows I'd like, you know, yeah. That she knows I'd look good in. So, but I don't think that
my girlfriend hasn't done that yet.
Yeah. She hasn't picked out one.
Like, she's not that great at picking out. Actually, just this last Christmas, she picked out like these, just like a regular oversized Fruit of the Loom sweatshirt and Carhartt pants. And I was like, oh, great. Love it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the Carhartt pants too, like that, you know, yeah. But
that was like the first time she got.
Yeah,
I was just like, oh yeah, all right,
great closer. Job. It's kind of like your mom nails it sometimes, you know, like your mom, like my mom always buys me clothes, and it's great to get free clothes, but a lot of times it's like, oh, this just isn't it.
Yeah.
But like sometimes I'm like, wow, you really nailed it. Like, yeah. But my mom doesn't want me to dress the way I dress, so she's always trying to like lead me to a, you know, she's always like, I think you'd look good if you wore.
Yeah. This collared shirt.
Yeah, you know.
And you're like, oof.
Yeah, but sometimes she nails it. Yeah. But yeah, I guess the question is,
working with my brother
in a collaborative form, like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets? Obviously, a director needs to be the person to filter the ideas and say no to certain things and say yes to certain things. The director has to be the kind of the final voice. But like, I was thinking about like an album like Body Language by Robin, like that, the thing that makes that album work for me is the production on it, or even more recent, like Justin Bieber's album that he made with Skrillex.
Mm-hmm.
And like the thing that made the album work was like Skrillex produced some dope ass beats for him.
Right.
And Justin Bieber's got a great voice, and like it was probably like the had the best songs of any album he's put out yet.
I feel
but
the
like
same way.
The beats that Skrillex made are probably really the thing that like made that was kind of the glue that made the album like, oh, this really like stands out as like a, you know, like a mature,
slaps.
Yeah, fucking slaps, dude. That beat in Sorry, that like, oh, like, like that shit's hot.
Yeah.
And like, but then who gets credit for it? And I think a lot of people like rightly give a lot of credit to Skrillex. I don't think anyone's like missing that. I think that people like understand that you got to give the producer credit. I think there's a reason why there's like super producers like Timbaland and like
these people. Well, isn't Skrillex writing the actual music and beats to
it
as well?
Did he write the lyrics and
songs? No, not the lyrics, but the music, the actual,
I'm assuming
that he's putting together the actual. Like,
yeah, he's like creating the.
Yeah, he's the musician.
Yeah. Kind of like a Daft Punk album. It's like they're making the songs, and Pharrell's just singing what they tell him to sing.
He might put his own. I mean, he might write his own lyrics or whatever onto.
You think Pharrell writes his own lyrics on a Daft Punk song?
I don't know.
I feel like Daft Punk writes the lyrics, and that's why like the song is Daft Punk featuring Pharrell Williams. Like
maybe.
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Because even if you put like a, on any, you know, on any rap song that I can think of. Like
they write their verse. Yeah, a rapper writes their verse.
No, but they'll take, Kanye West will take a sound clip of Ray Charles,
mm-hmm.
and then it says featuring Ray Charles, but it's just of an old song, so it's still Ray Charles's lyrics.
Yeah,
it's not Kanye. It's a Kanye West song featuring Ray Charles.
They've got Old Town Road right now featuring Billy Ray Cyrus, and it's like Billy Ray Cyrus isn't like, he just wrote the original song, but like he had nothing to do with the track.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's also like getting him all this publicity because he's I guess the question is like who gets the credit, but or does it matter? Because I look at someone like Billie Eilish, and I'm like I didn't. How do you feel about Billie Eilish?
I liked that last album. That was pretty.
Yeah,
that was pretty banging.
I mean, it's pretty dope. But the thing
it's
that
like,
I
it's dark too. But I think and
that,
I like that.
I think the thing that's most appealing about her is the tone, is the aesthetic, like whatever it is that she's doing that makes me feel old because I'm like. Boy, I don't know what that is, and I don't know like what that stuff. I'm not gonna dress like that, and I'm not gonna. But like, it's clearly something that like is resonating, not just with young people, but like with everyone that we're seeing it as like, oh, that's something new and different and and undeniably cool.
Yeah.
Like, even though she's only 17 years old and you want to
make... She's only 17 years old?
I think she's 18 now. But it's like, that's why I didn't want to like her. I was like, fuck this. Like, I'm not going to give a 17-year-old, like, my time and attention and, like, my respect as, like, an artist. But then I look at it and I'm like... God, that's cool. Like,
that's dope.
Like, it's fucking cool. And it's like, she's not like playing the necessarily like the sex appeal line. She's really just being like, this is me and I'm cool. And I, you know, like I wear like 50 necklaces and baggy sweats and like,
I kind of look like Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. You know, but
2019 Avril Lavigne.
But I look at that and I go, is that her? Did she come out into the world as a person? Like when she was discovering her identity as a teenager and just kind of go, I'm going to do this and it's going to be dope.
I think so, but I wouldn't be surprised if she, you know.
Or is it a team? Is there, you know, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if she's taking, you know, inspiration from people like Tyler, the Creator, you know, and it's like.
She totally is. She said that she is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She said that he's
I think that's a very, I mean, I think it's very evident, you know, when I listen to her music. It's just like, because it's got this like dark, warped kind of vibe to it, and so I think, you know,
yeah, it like scares Mary if I put it on sometimes, like that song that starts out and the guy goes Billy, and he goes come here, she gets really scared, she's like no Austin, don't.
She jumps in her little bed for it,
no
closes the curtain. I think that's her self-expression for sure coming through. But I think she's obviously been influenced by things that she's seen and heard. And, you know, it's a bit of, you know, her taste is a bit of what she's experienced in the world. I think the reason that she might like something like Tyler, the Creator, is because that's also a feeling or something that she has experience, and it encapsulates some feeling that she's experienced, that she that all of a sudden now that's her taste, you know. Tyler, the Creator, is her taste because that's it's a feeling that resonates with her, you know. And so whether she goes off into and makes this album and it's just like, oh, I want to make music that makes me feel this way because I've heard other music that makes me feel this way. And I think this feeling is something that is unique about me or whatever. That resonates with who I am and with my self-expression, to make a song, you know, that resonates like that. Is in the same vein as something like Tyler, the Creator. I don't know. It's hard for me to say what, you know, if that's her self-expression or if she's taking.
Well, I think it's probably a mixture.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess this is me just trying to therapize, like, why am I not effortlessly cool? Why does it have to be so evident that I'm trying to be cool?
Yeah. I feel like everyone's trying. I feel like maybe some people care less about that they're trying. I mean, even like the people that are cool are trying to be cool or think that they're cool, or
fucking
they're not.
Of course they are.
Or they just believe it. I mean, like, that's the difference. It's like, they're not trying. They just like, they just believe that, oh, my self-expression is cool and I'm gonna do it.
Well, and don't you think that's such a big part of performance too? Is like, I always think like a big part of like succeeding on screen or like as an actor, or a big part of like is just like, can you just do it confidently?
Yeah.
Can you not freak out? Can you do it with the confidence that, like, I know I'm good at this. I know I'm capable of doing this. I don't need to be worried about, like, is this how I say this? Is this the best delivery for this line? You know, like, am I going to miss my mark? Am I, like, just, like, the ability to relax and, like, I've been watching my friends, the New Yorkers, do their stand-up comedy that, like, you know, and it occurs to me that, like, a big thing for comics to get the hang of when they're first starting out is, like, the ability to relax on stage. Like, the ability to, like, go up there and stand up there like they've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And, like, and that, like, really sets the audience at ease and really, like... Yeah, and that probably carries into social interactions as well.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I thought about this the other day also. It goes along with just like, you know, the belief. I mean, just the idea that faith is such a powerful force and a powerful tool. And, you know, faith, I feel like, is just the belief that something is coming or will happen or whatever, or is happening. And it's just interesting to me that you know, faith has such a religious connotation, and, you know, it's almost been, like, trademarked by religion. And if you separate it from religion, you know, I feel like, you know, even in the Bible, it's like, you know, through faith you will find the kingdom of heaven or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't read my Bible daily, but, you know, it's just like, if you take that out of, oh, faith in, you know, the Christian God or the Christian, whatever. And if it's just like, oh, through faith, through the belief that something will happen or the belief that something is happening, that you will find the kingdom of heaven or salvation or whatever the quote is just like, oh, that's interesting to me, because I think that there is a truth in that.
Of course. Yeah. I think I've spent most of the last 10 years thinking faith's a bad word and like kind of instantly cringing the second anyone says that.
Right.
The second anyone says, well, you got to have faith, or, you know, faith's a big part of my life. The first thing that pops in my head is, you're an idiot.
Oh, totally. Like, oh yeah.
You're a fucking idiot. But I don't say that, but I just instantly am like, moron, like, you know. But like, I think that in the last year of my life, faith's been coming back in a big way of like realizing like how important it is to put faith into the idea that everything's going to be okay.
Mm.
And the idea that like, if I continue to pursue what's intellectually and emotionally honest to me, what's true to me, if I continue to put one foot in front of the other on that path, things will continue to unfold in a way that is nice.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to be nice, and it's all, you know, but it's like just trusting that like, I don't need to try to wield the river that I'm in to like the design that I think it should be in, but like trusting that like this river is going to take me where I need to be.
Right.
Like it's going to, like, if I just like sit in the river that is the river of my emotional and intellectual truth, it'll take me where I need to be, and I don't need to fight it, and I don't need to like worry about it and like constantly try to like swim upstream or constantly try to forge my own new river.
Right.
Like I can just like have faith that like it will lead to, I don't know, a lake or or the ocean.
Yeah.
And then I'll be killed in the ocean by a whale.
Yeah. Wow. Way to really tie up that metaphor. That was beautiful.
It'll lead me to the ocean where I will promptly be eaten by a shark.
Yeah.
And I have faith that.
So that's going to happen. No, yeah. No, yeah. I hear what you're saying. And I think going back to, you know, acting and being like, oh, is this the right delivery? But if you're just trying to tell the truth, then how you're saying it isn't as important as if it's honest and truthful. So I think if you're being honest and truthful, then you're not thinking about your delivery, because you're actively trying to get an idea or something across to you, to who you're acting across from. And that's,
but also, don't you think that in order to get to the place, because I 100% agree with what you're saying, that if you're just like all the stuff that you learn in acting school, playing an action and playing an objective and play, like all of that stuff, all of that stuff kind of takes care of itself when you're just telling the truth.
Right.
All of that stuff kind of, you don't need to like be thinking about like, am I breathing? Am I, you know, like, listening right now? Am I like, you don't need to really think about that stuff if you're just telling the truth.
Yeah.
But don't you think that it's easier to tell the truth and to be real in that moment when you can relax and be cool?
Right. When you're breathing and when you're,
doing all the stuff that you learn. But what role in that does just being like, I go back to like just being cool. Like there's something about Brad Pitt. Someone said this to me the other day. They were like, you know what it is he's just so relaxed. Like in any movie you see him and you're like, he's fine.
Especially nowadays.
He's just,
I actually kind of miss him in the older movies. Like Burn After Reading.
Yeah.
I feel like he was playing such a character, you know, and like Fight Club, he was like a different character, and like Seven, he was a different character, and like all of these movies, he's playing this different character. And then I feel like nowadays he's kind of like, you know, he's kind of the same guy every time. He's just like cool hand Luke.
He's just eating food.
Yeah.
He's just
eating. Just like, what?
Just like, well, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But also, but I guess there's some, you see people like him and you just feel like this person's so comfortable.
Yeah.
That I'm not worried that they're going to like make an acting choice that makes me go, ooh.
No.
Like I never, you know, and like, and I feel like if you're on set with that person, like the way that they move through a scene, you're just like, wow, what an effortless pro.
Yeah.
You know, just like what a, like, like this person's just chill.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
That's and my my goal every time I'm on set is just like, don't let them know that you're freaking out. Don't let them know that you that you're really worried about hitting the fact that on the last take you didn't quite hit your mark and the DP came up and said, you went one extra step that last take. Can you tell me where you're going to land? Because the one time you landed here and the next time you landed here and they're literally 5 inches apart. And you're
I know, but that's,
you know,
yeah, that's hard to – because I don't think that's – I don't know, because I think if you are concentrated on telling the truth, then how much of you is thinking about hitting your mark? You know what I mean? It's like there's a struggle there that I maybe I wouldn't fault you for, because if you are if you actually are in the moment and are telling the truth,
mm-hmm.
then you know hitting the fucking piece of tape on the floor is nowhere near as important as, you know, getting the person who's who you love to stay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If that's your objective in the scene and you're actually in there, like, yeah. In that, like, hitting the piece of tape on the floor, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
And I guess I think
that's not really your job as... I mean, it is, but it's not as important. And the fucking DP should, you know how to rack focus. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, Jesus. Like,
yeah, I also think I'm like, you never see them talking to, like, big celebrities that way. They're never like, oh, so Brad. You took an extra step on that last take. It's like, yeah, just fucking follow me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Dude, and yeah, I was reading this thing about Joaquin Phoenix in The Master, and PTA noticing that he would walk outside of the frame. Mm-hmm. Like, he would use the whole, you know, the whole set.
Oh, and that scene when he's fighting with Philip Seymour Hoffman in the jail, he's doing whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
He knocked that sink or that toilet off the wall, and it was like an antique toilet. Like, that was like a protected space where they got in big trouble because he, like, destroyed this, like...
The sink.
When he's in the jail cell and they're fighting, like, they're arguing with each other, and he starts, like, slamming his back on, like, the mattresses, and then he kicks that toilet off the wall.
Yeah.
That was... That space was like a protected space, and he was not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just does That's whatever hilarious. The fuck he wants. Yeah.
Well, he also broke the sink off the wall in Walk the Line.
Yeah, he loves that move. They're like,
I
so,
love that.
So Joaquin, do whatever you want, just please that. Try not to rip any appliances out of the walls. And he's like, I'm going to do what I want.
He's like, okay.
I'm going to rip a sink.
No. Like, please. Like, please don't.
I'm going to rip a sink out of the wall if I want to rip a sink.
Oh, I won't. Joaquin, please stop saying it. Like, I need you to look me in the eye and tell me that you understand that you won't rip the sink or the toilet out of the ground or the wall.
I'm not going to rip a sink out of the
wall. Oh, I won't.
Please just tell me. I'm not going to tell you.
What was that?
I'm not going to rip it.
I won't rip it.
No, I'm not gonna ruin
it. Say it. See, you're gonna have to speak up. I won't rip it out.
But also, so smart of Paul Thomas Anderson to just go, cool. So we're just gonna
shoot
this.
Yeah, so we're just gonna follow him.
We're just gonna shoot this wide, and we're just gonna kind of like,
They have more respect for.
Yeah, but with a day player, they're like, hey, this is the shot we're doing, and you fucked it up.
Get it together.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, go fuck yourself.
Uh huh. But yeah, I guess the reason why I keep doing this stuff is because of what you said, where it's like, hey, as long as you're telling the truth at the end of the day, it all takes, because that's what I've always thought. At the end of the day, is I'm like, I do have this stupid insecurity where I'm like, everyone thinks I'm a phony. Everyone thinks my music's stupid because I'm trying to emulate someone else who did it better or said it better, you know? But I think that what keeps me going is at the end of the day, I'm like, it's the most honest thing I know how to do. It's the only thing I ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
And if I'm being intellectually and emotionally honest about my life, that's the only thing that makes sense for me to do.
Yeah.
And I do think, honestly, that I have some skill at it, and that
And
I even though used to think when I first started dressing like a quote unquote hipster, that when people would talk about people wearing certain things ironically, like it's so annoying when people wear suspenders ironically. I was like, I'm not wearing them ironically. Like, I actually like suspenders.
I mean this.
Like, before I had a beer gut, I liked the way suspenders held my pants up more than a belt, because I had no hips and I had such a skinny waist that I was like, a belt just slides down over time. Like, I actually prefer the way that suspenders hold my pants up. So I would wear suspenders under my clothes, like not even to be seen. I would just like have them on under my clothes, and people would be like, they'd sometimes like pat me on the back and be like,
are you wearing suspenders?
Yeah, and I'd be like, yeah. And then people, it's like, I'm really not doing it ironically. I genuinely like wearing suspenders, and listen,
I support you. But I support you like a good pair of suspenders.
And that's how I feel about fashion. That's how I feel about art. Is everything? It's like, I genuinely like enjoy making music. I genuinely, and yeah, I'm definitely trying to be cool.
Yeah,
but also like,
no, it's like, you know, and I'm you know, I think if we go back to, you know, just my this new endeavor of filmmaking, I think, you know, oh no. Wow.
We got a text. We got a ding.
Wow.
I don't think anyone's going to hear that. If they did, it's a little ding. Stuart just dinged me because she asked if we're recording.
I don't know if it was my phone.
It was my phone. Stuart asked if we were recording. She's coming in right now.
Oh, shit.
But it's all right. We won't hear it.
Oh, God. I think we will. No, we probably won't.
We have to scrap the whole thing now.
Yep, it's over.
No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, keep going. you were talking about this new thing of filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't really remember the point that I was going to make.
Now you're insecure because someone else is in the room.
No, are they?
No, they left. Oh.
Because we scared them off.
Yeah.
You know, just, oh God. Going back to this idea of filmmaking, this new endeavor of mine. I mean, I think I am also, I don't want to say I'm trying to look cool, but I am, there are movies that I like, you know, and I think I like my film, and I think it, because it resonates with this taste or whatever that I think that I have, which is really just, maybe just, I don't know. I don't know what taste is, but
I think that taste though can rescue you from like a lack of artistic objectivity. I think that that's been one of the big fears of my life, is like, how do I know if my stuff is bad? And it's like, well, hopefully if you can recognize what you like and what you think looks good and like what, like, hopefully you can see when something you've made doesn't rise to the standards of your taste.
Yeah.
And when it does.
Yeah.
And it can hopefully not only help you create better art, but also rescue you from that fear of how, you know, because maybe the reason why people like, I'll just say Corey Feldman, because it's an example I use a lot, but like the reason why he's not able to tell that his music's no good is because he has bad taste in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, he just like has horrible taste in clothes and music himself, and like you know,
he has bad taste.
Yeah, so he just,
I know,
so he doesn't know that the stuff he's making is bad because he has bad taste.
Yeah
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's I was gonna say something else, but I forgot what it was. I think that's also why I started to make films, is because like I would watch other people make films and be like, God, like I could do better than that. Like, that's not, and I'm also like constantly auditioning.
Or I could at least do as good.
I'm also like constantly auditioning for things, and I'm reading a script and being like, this is bad.
And
like,
someone's this making not, this.
Yeah,
someone's giving this money.
Yeah.
Someone's, yeah.
There's money behind this. Uh-huh. And if I actually think that I can do better, then I should.
Yeah. And I think you will.
This is what I was gonna say, is that there's this quote, I forget who it's by, but I think that's the struggle of the artist, is to constantly be trying to make their product, whatever it is, up to where their taste is. Like, yeah. I think a good artist has good taste.
I think it was Ira Glass just, that said, Ira Glass was talking about, like how you got into this because you have good taste.
Yes.
And the reason why you were unsatisfied with your earlier stuff is because you have good taste.
Yes.
And so you practiced it until the stuff got up to the level of, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Was that the quote you were thinking
yes,
of?
Yes, 100%. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's right on. You know, I think that's what we're all kind of aspiring to. And if we are making stuff that, you know, we do think is bad, that means we do have good taste.
Because mm-hmm.
there's other people who are making bad stuff who they think it's good.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. We don't have a problem because we're like hard on ourselves. I mean, like that's going to make our work better in the end. Because we're constantly going to be improving. I mean, like, you know, when you have people making films like Paul Thomas Anderson or the Coen brothers who are just making, you know, just
masterpiece after masterpiece.
You know yeah. what I mean?
Effortless.
Ah, yeah. Especially Paul Thomas Anderson. Yeah, jeez. Jeez.
What I mean, like, the fact that Phantom Thread's an original screenplay that he's yeah. just kind of like, here's this amazing, timeless story. Just yeah. This beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A person like Quentin Tarantino, where you just know the movie's going to be better than 99% of what's in the theater right now. You know when he's coming out with a movie, even if it's not your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, you're like, this is going to be better than almost everything else in the theater right now.
Right. And like, I think those standards become my standards. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it goes back to, you know, our taste. It's like, well, if that is where I watch a movie like, you know, like The Master or There Will Be Blood or No Country for Old Men or, you know.
And people are all huge fans. They're all huge fans of the medium. They're yeah. all like.
And they took things from other people yeah, too, but they are making. Who, yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to make their version of the things that they saw when they were kids, and they're correct. Trying to aspire to the greatness that, the, yeah. that inspired their passion.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, yeah. I think, anyway, I think you're well on your way, and I think that you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I'm working on another short, and I'm working on a feature, and.
Good.
You know, we'll just keep trucking away.
Jess Kellner.
That's me, baby.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about this topic?
No. I think we exhausted it pretty.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we spoke enough about it.
Yeah.
I feel like it was successful.
Slightly less insecure and slightly more insecure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel less. I mean, I don't, you know, I think that quote by Ira Glass is like inspiring because it's like, even if you are on set and you're terrified, it's like you have to take action even within that fear and mm-hmm. be like, oh, thank you, fear, or thank you, little voice that's being like
yep.
super annoying right now. I'm going to keep doing this because this is what I want to accomplish, because that little voice is probably never going to go away. You just get better at dealing with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only way to keep, you know, get better at dealing with it is to just keep doing
yeah.
the stuff that, you know, brings that little voice on. Because if you're not doing big stuff, the little voice isn't there. You know, it's not like, you're not cutting this vegetable right. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't give a shit because you're not actually challenging yourself and challenging your person and growing.
Yeah.
You're not... You know, if you're not gambling anything, then you have and you have nothing to lose, then that little voice won't show up. So actually that little voice is probably a good indicator that you're doing something worthwhile.
I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I love you.
Love you too, buddy.
And thanks for coming over to my blanket fort.
Hey.
And
couple of people pleasers over here.
People pleasers. Alrighty. All right. Thanks, Jess.
Peace, bro.
Bye. So after talking to Jess, I'm not sure I'm any more convinced that there isn't some secret cool gene that I missed out on. But that's only because my fear and insecurity rule a disproportionate amount of my thinking. My rational brain knows that he has a very good point. As cool and original as Bob Dylan indeed was, he changed his name from Robert Zimmerman because he was insecure about it. And sure, Bob Dylan is a cool name, but I don't think I'd be less inclined to listen to a song by someone named Robert Zimmerman. I think Robert Zimmerman's a cool name. Even Bowie crafted the Ziggy Stardust idea and persona after Vince Taylor and Kansai Yamamoto, two artists he admired greatly.
A producer once said of Bowie's work, he'd take bits and pieces from all over the place, put them in a melting pot, and they'd come out being him. And if you can't take a blueprint from Bowie on how to be cool, then who can you take one from? Apparently, we all just need to find what moves us and copy the hell out of it. The upshot being, no matter how hard we try to look, sound, or feel like others, some part of what we produce will always wind up being inescapably unique. People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original music also by me. You can find more of my music on Apple Music or Spotify or at austin-archer.com. That's Austin dash, not the word dash, but an actual dash and not a slash, a dash with a D, the key next to your zero on your keyboard, austin-archer.com. Thanks for listening.